At Sea. Chapter 1. There was a long white beach with coconut palms behind it. The reef lay across the entrance to the harbor, and the heavy east wind made the sea break on it so that the entrance was easy to see once you'd opened it up. There was no one on the beach, and the sand was so white that it hurt his eyes to look at it. The man on the flying bridge studied the shore. There were no shacks where the shacks should have been, and there were no boats anchored in the lagoon that he could see. "You've been in here before," he said to his mate.
"Yes."
"Weren't the shacks over there?"
"They were over there, and it shows a village on the chart."
"They sure as hell aren't here now," the man said. "Can you make out any boats up in the mangroves?"
"There's nothing that I can see."
"I'm going to take her in and anchor," the man said. "I know this cut. It's about 8 times as deep as it looks." He looked down into the green water and saw the size of the shadow of his ship on the bottom.
"There's good holding ground east from where the village used to be," his mate said.
"I know. Break out the starboard anchor and stand by. I'm going to lay off there. With this wind blowing day and night, there'll be no insects."
"No, sir."
They anchored, and the boat, not big enough to be called a ship except in the mind of the man who was her master, lay with her bow into the wind, with the waves breaking white and green on the reef. The man on the bridge watched that she swung well and held solidly. Then he looked ashore and cut his motors. He continued to look at the shore, and he could not figure it out at all. "Take 3 men in and have a look," he said. "I'm going to lie down a while. Remember your scientists." When they were scientists, no weapons showed, and they wore machetes and wide straw hats, such as Bahaman spongers wear. These the crew referred to as sombreros científicos. The larger they were, the more scientific they were considered.
"Someone has stolen my scientific hat," a heavy-shouldered Basque with thick eyebrows that came together over his nose said. "Give me a bag of frags for science's sake."
"Take my scientific hat," another Basque said. "It's twice as scientific as yours."
"What a scientific hat," the widest of the Basques said. "I feel like Einstein in this one. Thomas, can we take specimens?"
"No," the man said. "Antonio knows what I want him to do. You keep your damn scientific eyes open."
"I look for water."
"It's behind where the village was," the man said. "See how it is. We'd probably better fill."
H2O, the Basque said. "That scientific stuff. Hey, you worthless scientist, you hat stealer. Give us 4 5-gallon jugs so we won't waste the trip."
The other Basque put 4 wicker-covered jugs in the dinghy. The man heard them talking.
"Don't hit me in the back with that damn scientific oar.
I do it only for science.
Fornicate science on his brother.
Science's sister.
Penicillin is her name."
The man watched them rowing toward the 2 white beach. "I should have gone in," he thought. "But I was up all night, and I've steered 12 hours. Antonio can size it up as well as I can, but I wonder what the hell has happened." He looked once at the reef and then at the shore, and at the current of clean water running against the side and making little eddies in the lee. Then he shut his eyes and turned on his side and went to sleep. He woke as the dinghy came alongside, and he knew it was something bad when he saw their faces. His mate was sweating as he always did with trouble or bad news. He was a dry man, and he did not sweat easily.
"Somebody burned the shacks," he said. "Somebody tried to put them out, and there are bodies in the ashes. You can't smell them from here because of the wind."
"How many bodies?"
"We counted 9. There could be more."
"Men or women?"
"Both."
"Are there any tracks?"
"Nothing. It's rain since heavy rain. The sand is still peated with it."
The wide-shouldered Basque, whose name was Ara, said,
"They've been dead a week anyway. Birds haven't worked on them, but the land crabs are working on them."
"How do you know they've been dead a week?"
"No one can say exactly," Ara said, "but they have been dead about a week. From the land crab trails, the rain was about 3 days ago."
"How was the water?"
"It looked all right."
"Did you bring it?"
"Yes." "I don't see why they would have poisoned the water," Ara said. "It smelled good, so I tasted it and brought it."
"You shouldn't have tasted it."
"It smelled good, and there was no reason to believe it was poison."
Who killed the people?
Many body.
Didn't you check?
No, we came to tell you. You are the skipper.
All right, said Thomas Hudson. He went below and buckled on his revolver. There was a sheath knife on the other side of the belt, the side that rode high, and the weight of the gun was on his leg. He stopped in the galley and took a spoon and put it in his pocket.
Ara, you and Henry come ashore. Willie, come in with the dinghy and then see if you can get some conches. Let Peter sleep.
To his mate, he said, check the engines, please, and all tanks. The water was clear and lovely over the white sand bottom, and he could see every ridge and wrinkle in the sand. As they waded ashore when the dinghy grounded on a ridge of sand, he felt small fish playing around his toes and looked down and saw they were tiny pompano. Maybe they are not true pompano, he thought, but they look exactly like them and they are most friendly. Henry, he said when they were ashore, you take the windward beach and walk it all the way up to the mangroves. Watch for tracks or anything else. Meet me here. Ara, you take the other beach and do the same. He did not have to ask where the bodies were. He saw the tracks that led to them and heard the rattle of the land crabs in the dry brush. He looked out at his ship and the line of the breakers, and Willie in the stern of the skiff with a water glass looking over the side for conches while the skiff drifted. Since I have to do it, I might as well get it over with, he thought. But this day was built for something else. It is strange how they had such a rain here where there was no need for it and we had nothing. How long is it now that we have seen the rains go by on either side and never had a drop? The wind was blowing heavily and had blown now day and night for more than 50 days. It had become a part of the man, and it did not make him nervous. It fortified him and gave him strength, and he hoped that it would never stop. We wait always for something that does not come, he thought. But it is easier waiting with the wind than in a calm or with the capriciousness and malignancy of squalls. There is always water somewhere. Let it stay dry, we can always find it. There is water on all these keys if you know how to look for it. Now, he thought to himself, go in and get it over with. The wind helped him to get it over with. As he crouched under the scorched sea grape bushes and sifted the sand in double handfuls, the wind blew the scent of what was just ahead of him away. He found nothing in the sand, and he was puzzled, but he looked in all the sand to windward of the burned shacks before he moved in. He had hoped to find what he looked for the easier way, but there was nothing. Then, with the wind at his back, so that he turned and gulped it and then held his breath, again he went to work with his knife probing into the charred deliquescence that the land crabs were feeding on. He touched a sudden hardness that rolled against a bone and dug it out with the spoon. He laid it on the sand with the spoon and probed and dug and found 3 more in the pile. Then he turned into the wind and cleaned the knife and the spoon in the sand. He took the 4 bullets in a handful of sand and with the knife and the spoon in his left hand, made his way back through the brush. A big land crab, obscenely white, reared back and lifted his claws at him. You're on the way in, boy, the man said to him. I'm on the way out. The crab stood his ground with his claws raised high and the points open sharply. You're getting pretty big for yourself, the man said. He put his knife slowly in its sheath and the spoon in his pocket. Then he shifted the handful of sand with the 4 bullets in it to his left hand. He wiped his right hand on his shorts carefully. Then he drew the sweat-darkened, well-oiled .357 Magnum. You still have a chance, he said to the land crab. Nobody blames you. You're having your pleasure and doing your duty. The crab did not move, and his claws were held high. He was a big crab, nearly a foot across. And the man shot him between his eyes, and the crab disintegrated. Those damn 357s are hard to get now because draft-dodging FBIs have to use them to hunt down draft dodgers, the man said. But a man has to fire a shot sometime, or he doesn't know how he's shooting. Poor old crab, he thought. All he was practicing was his trade. But he ought to have shuffled along. He came out onto the beach and saw where his ship was riding, and the steady line of the surf and Willie anchored now and diving for conscious. He cleaned his knife properly and scrubbed the spoon and washed it, and then washed the four bullets. He held them in his hand and looked at them as a man who was panning for gold, expecting only flakes, would look at four nuggets in his pan. The four bullets had black noses. Now the meat was out of them. The short twist rifling showed clearly. They were 9mm standard issue for the Schmeisser machine pistol. They made the man very happy. They picked up all the hulls, he thought, but they left these as plain as calling cards. Now I must try to think it out. We know two things. They left nobody on the quay, and the boats are gone. Go on from there, boy. You're supposed to be able to think. But he did not think. Instead, he lay back on the sand with his pistol pulled over it so it lay between his legs, and he watched the sculpture that the wind and sand had made on a piece of driftwood. It was gray and sanded, and it was embedded in the white, flowery sand. It looked as though it were in an exhibition. It should be in the Salon d'Automne. He heard the breaking roar of the seas on the reef, and he thought, I would like to paint this. He lay and looked at the sky, which had nothing but east wind in it, and the four bullets were in the button-down change pocket of his shorts. He knew they were the rest of his life, but he did not wish to think about them now, nor make all the practical thinking that he must make. I will enjoy the gray wood, he thought. Now we know that we have our enemies and that they cannot escape. Neither can we. But there is no necessity to think about it. Until Ada and Henry are back, Ada will find something. There is something to be found, and he is not a fool. A beach tells many lies, but somewhere the truth is always written. He felt the bullets in his change pocket, and then he elbowed his way back to where the sand was drier and even whiter, if there could be a comparison in such whiteness. And he lay with his head against the gray piece of driftwood, and his pistol between his legs. How long have you been my girl? He said to the pistol. Don't answer, he said to the pistol. Lie there good, and I will see you kill something better than land crabs when the time comes. Chapter 2. He was lying there, looking out at the line of surf, and he had it pretty well thought out by the time he saw Ada and Henry coming down the beach. He saw them, and then looked away from them, and out to sea again. He had tried not to think about it and to relax, but it had been impossible. Now he would relax until they came, and he would think of nothing but the sea on the reef. But there was not time. They came too fast. What did you find? He asked Ada, who sat down by the gray driftwood. Henry sat beside him.
I found one, a young man, dead.
He was a German, all right, Henry said. He only had on shorts, and he had very long hair, blonde and sun-streaked, and he was face down in the sand. Where was he shot?
At the base of the spine and in the back of the neck, Ada said. Rematado. Here are the bullets. I washed them.
Yes, said Thomas Hudson. I have four like them. They're 9mm Luger, aren't they? Henry asked. It's the same caliber as our 38s. These with the black ends are for the machine pistol, Thomas Hudson said. Thanks for digging them out, Doctor.
At your orders, Ada said. The neck one had gone clean through and I found it in the sand. Henry caught out the other one.
I didn't mind it, Henry said. The wind and the sun had sort of dried him. It was like cutting into a pie. It wasn't like those in there. Why did they kill him, Tom?
I don't know. What do you think? Ada asked. Did they come in here to make repairs?
No, they've lost their boat.
Yes, Ada said. They took the boats.
Why was the sailor killed? Henry asked. You forgive me if I don't sound too intelligent, Tom, but you know how much I want to do what I can, and I'm so happy we have contact.
We haven't contact, Thomas Hudson said. But Christ, we got a lovely scent.
Breast high? Henry asked hopefully. Don't mention that word to me. But Tom, who killed the sailor and why?
Family trouble, Thomas Hudson said. Did you ever see a man shot on the base of the spine for kindness? Afterwards, whoever did it was kind and shot him in the neck.
Maybe there were two, said Ara.
Did you find the holes?
No, Ara said. I look where they would be. Even if it was a machine pistol, it would not have thrown them further than I looked.
Could be the same methodical bastard that picked up the other ones.
Where would they go? Ara asked. Where would they make for with the boats?
They have to go south, Thomas Hudson said. You know damn well they can't go north.
And we?
I'm trying to think in their heads, Thomas Hudson said. I haven't many facts to go on.
You have the deads, and the boat's gone, Henry said. You can think it out, Tom.
And one known weapon, and where did they lose their undersea boat, and how many are they? Stir that and add we couldn't raise Guantanamo last night, and add how many keys there are south of here, plus when we have to fill our tanks, add Peters, and serve.
It will be all right, Tom.
Sure, Thomas Hudson said. All right and all wrong are identical twins in this business.
You're confident we will get them, though, aren't you?
Of course, Thomas Hudson said. Now go and flag Willie in and let Antonio get started on his conches. We will have chowder. Ara, you load all the water you can in the next 3 hours. Tell Antonio to go ahead on the motors. I want to get out of here before dark. Was there nothing on the island? No pigs nor any fowl?
Nothing, Ara told him. They took everything.
Well, they will have to eat them. They have no feed for them and no ice. They are German, so they are capable, and they can get turtle in these months. I think we will find them at Lobos. It is logical they should take Lobos. Have Willie fill the ice well with conches, and we will take only enough water to the next key. He stopped and reconsidered. No, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Fill water until sundown, and I will take her out at moonrise. We lose 3 hours, but we save 6 later on.
Did you taste the water?
Ara asked. Yes, he said. It was clean and good. You were quite right.
Thank you, Ara said. I will go now to call in Willie. He has been diving many.
Tom, Henry asked, you want me to stay with you or to carry water or what?
Carry water until you're too tired and then get some sleep. I want you on the bridge with me tonight.
Can I bring you a shirt or a sweater? Henry asked.
Bring me a shirt and one of the very light blankets, Thomas Hudson said. I can sleep now in the sun, and the sand is dry, but later on it will be cool with the wind.
Isn't the sand wonderful? I've never known such dry or powdery sand.
The wind has beaten it for many years.
Will we get them, Tommy?
Of course, Thomas Hudson said. There is no doubt of it at all.
Please forgive me if I am ever stupid, Henry said.
You were forgiven when you were born, Thomas Hudson said. You are a very brave boy, Henry, and I'm fond of you and trust you. You're not stupid either.
You truly think we will have a fight?
I know it. Do not think about that. Think about details. Think about all the things you should do and how we should be a happy ship until we fight. I'll think about the fight.
I will go and do my duty as well as I can, Henry said. I wish we could practice the fight so I could do my part better.
Thomas Hudson said, you'll do it all right. I do not see any way that we can miss it.
It's been so very long, Henry said.
But everything is long, Thomas Hudson told him, and pursuit is the longest.
Get some sleep, Henry said. You never sleep anymore.
I'll sleep, Thomas Hudson said.
Where do you suppose they lost their own boat, Tom?
Ara asked. They got these boats here, and they did away with these people a week ago, say. So they must be the one that Camagüey claimed. But they got somewhere close to here before they lost her. They didn't sail any rubber boats into that wind.
Then they must have lost her east of here.
Naturally. And they were damn well in the clear when they lost her, Thomas Hudson said.
It was still a long way home, Henry said.
It's going to be a longer way home now, Ara said.
They're funny people, Thomas Hudson said. They're all brave, and some of them are so damned admirable. And they have mean ones like this.
We better go and do our work, Ara said. We can talk tonight and watch to keep awake. You get some rest, Tom.
Get some sleep, Henry said.
Rest is as good as sleep.
No, it isn't,
Ara said. You need sleep, Tom.
I'll try to get some, Thomas Hudson said. But when they were gone, he could not sleep. What do they have to do this rotten thing here for, he thought. We will get them anyway. All these people would have done was tell us how many they were and how they were armed. I suppose that was worth killing for, from their standpoint. Especially if they thought of these people as Negroes. But all that shows something about them. To have killed like that, they must have some plan and they must have some hope of being picked up. Also, there must have been dissension about the plan, or they would not have done this murdering here of the sailor. That could be an execution for anything, though. He might have let her go down when she could have been kept up to make the try to get home. Where does that bring us, he thought. You can't bank on that, it's only a possibility. But if it was true, it would mean she went down in sight of land and fast. That would mean they would not have much stuff. Maybe the boy did not do it and was falsely accused. You don't know how many boats they have, because there could be a boat or two boats from here out turtling. There's nothing to do but think around it and check your keys. But suppose they have crossed the old Bahama Channel and hit the Cuban coast. Sure, he thought. Why didn't you think of that before? That's the best thing for them to do. If they do that, they can make for home on a Spanish boat out of Havana. There is a screening at Kingston, but that is an easier chance to take, and you know plenty of people have beaten it. That damned Peters with his radio out, FCC, he thought. Frankly, can't communicate. Then we got the beauty big one, and it was too much radio for him. I don't know how he has fucked it. But he couldn't get Guantanamo last night on our call hour, and if he doesn't get her tonight, we are on our own. The hell with it, he thought. There are worse places to be than on your own. Get some sleep now, he said to himself. There's nothing you can do now that is sounder than that. He moved his shoulders against the sand and went to sleep with the roaring of the surf on the reef. Chapter 3. While Thomas Hudson was asleep, he dreamed that his son Tom was not dead and that the other boys were all right and that the war was over. He dreamed that Tom's mother was sleeping with him, and she was sleeping on top of him as she liked to do sometimes. He felt all of this, and the tangibility of her legs against his legs, and her body against his, and her breasts against his chest, and her mouth was playing against his mouth. Her hair hung down and lay heavy and silky on his eyes, and on his cheeks, and he turned his lips away from her searching ones, and took the hair in his mouth and held it. Then with one hand, he moistened the .357 Magnum and slipped it easily and sound asleep where it should be. Then he lay under her weight, with her silken hair over his face like a curtain, and moved slowly and rhythmically. That was when Henry put the light blanket over him, and Thomas Hudson said, asleep. Thank you for being so moist and lovely and for pressing on me so hard. Thank you for coming back so quickly and for not being too thin.
Poor son of a bitch, Henry said and covered him carefully.
He went away carrying two wicker 5-gallon demijohns on his shoulders. I thought you wanted me thin, Tom, the woman said in the dream. You said I felt like a young goat when I was thin, and that nothing felt better than a young goat.
You, he said. Who's going to make love to who?
Both of us, she said, unless you want it differently.
You make love to me, I'm tired.
You're just lazy. Let me take the pistol off and put it by your leg. That pistol's in the way of everything.
Lay it by the bed, he said, and make everything the way it should be.
Then it was all the way it should be, and she said, should I be you or you be me?
You have first choice.
I'll be you.
I can't be you, but I can try.
It's fun, you try it. Don't try to save yourself at all. Try to lose everything and take everything too. All right. Are you doing it? Yes, he said. It's wonderful. Do you know now what we have? Yes, he said. Yes, I know. It's easy to give up. Will you give up everything? Are you glad I brought back the boys and that I come and be a devil in the night? Yes, I'm glad of everything, and will you swing your hair across my face and give me your mouth, please, and hold me so tight it kills me? Of course. And you'll do it for me. When he woke, he touched the blanket, and he did not know for an instant that it was a dream. Then he lay on his side and felt the pistol holster between his legs, and how it was really, and all the hollownesses in him were twice as hollow, and there was a new one from the dream. He saw it was still light, and he saw the dinghy carrying water to his ship, and he saw the white pounding of the surf on the reef. He turned on his side and tucked the blanket around himself and slept on his arms. He was asleep when they came to wake him, and he had not dreamed at all this time.
This ends Disc 9.
Chapter 4. He steered all that night, and he had Ada on the flying bridge with him until midnight, and then Henry. They were running with a heavy beam sea, and steering was like riding a horse downhill, he thought. It is all downhill, and sometimes it is across the side of a hill. The sea is many hills, and in here it is a broken country like the Badlands. Talk to me, he said to Ada.
What about Tang?
Anything.
Peters couldn't raise Guantanamo again. He has ruined it, the new big one.
I know, Thomas Hudson said, and tried to roll her as little as he could, riding the side of the hill. He's burnt out something that he can't repair.
He's listening, Ada said. Willie is keeping him awake.
Who's keeping Willie awake?
He's awake good, Ada said. He doesn't sleep any better than you.
How about you?
I'm good for all night if you want. Don't you want me to steer?
No, I haven't anything else to do.
Tom, how badly do you feel?
I don't know, how badly can you feel?
It's useless, Ada said. Would you like the wineskin?
No, bring me up a bottle of cold tea and check on Peters and Willie. Check on everything. Ada went down and Thomas Hudson was alone with the night and the sea, and he still rode it like a horse going downhill too fast across broken country. Henry came up with the bottle of cold tea. How are we, Tom? He asked. We're perfect. Peters has the Miami Police Department on the old radio. All the prowl cars. Willie wants to talk to them, but I told him he couldn't.
Correct.
On the UHF, Peters has something squirting in German, but he says it's way up with the wolf packs.
Well, he couldn't hear it then.
It's a very funny night, Tom.
It's not that funny.
I don't know, I'm just telling you. Give me the course and let me take her and you go down.
Has Peters logged it?
Of course. Tell Juan to give me a fix and have Peters log it.
When was the son of a bitch squirting?
When I came up.
Tell Juan to get the fix and log it right away.
Yes, Tom.
How are all the comic characters?
Sleeping, Gil, too.
Get the rag out and have Peters log the fix.
Do you want it?
I know too damn well where we are.
Yes, Tom, Henry said.
Take it easy if you can.
Henry came up, but Thomas Hudson did not feel like talking, and Henry stood by him on the flying bridge and braced himself against the roll. After an hour, he said,
There's light, Tom, off our starboard bow about 20 degrees.
That's right. When he was abeam of it, he changed the course, and the sea was astern. Now she's headed home to pasture, he said to Henry. We're in the channel now. Wake Juan, get him up here and really keep your eyes open. You were late on the light.
I'm sorry, Tom. I'll get Juan. Wouldn't you like a four-man watch?
Not until just before daylight, Thomas Hudson said. I'll give you the word. They might have cut across the banks, Thomas Hudson was thinking, but I don't think they would. They wouldn't want to cross at night, and in the daytime the banks wouldn't look good to deep-water sailors. They'd make their turn where I did. Then they would edge across comfortably the way we are going to do, and they would probably hit for the highest part of the Cuban coast that showed. They don't want to get into any port, so they will run with the wind. They will keep outside at Confites because they know there's a radio station there. But they have to get food and they have to get water. Actually, they would do best to try and get as close to Havana as they could to land somewhere around Bacaranao and then infiltrate in from there. I'll send a signal from Confites. I won't ask him what to do. That will hold us up if he's away. I'll tell him what it is and what I'm doing. He can make his own dispositions. Guantanamo can make theirs, and Camagüey can make theirs, and La Fe theirs, and the FBI theirs, and maybe something will happen in a week. Hell, he thought, I'll get them this week. They've got to stop for water and to cook what they have before the animals starve and rot. There's a good chance they will only run at nights and lay up daytimes. That would be logical. That's what I would do if I were them. Try to think like an intelligent German sailor with the problems this undersea boat commander has. He has problems, all right, Thomas Hudson thought. And the worst problem he has is us, and he doesn't even know about us. We don't look dangerous to him. We look good to him. Don't take it in any bloodthirsty way, he thought. Nothing of this is going to bring back anything. Use your head and be glad to have something to do and good people to do it with. Juan, he said. What do you see, boy?
All bloody ocean.
You other gentlemen see anything?
Bloody nothing, Gil said. My bloody belly sees coffee, but it doesn't come any closer, Ara said.
I see land, Henry said.
He had seen at that instant a low, square smudge as though a man's thumb had daubed weak ink against the lightening sky. That's behind Romano, Thomas Hudson said. Thank you, Henry. Now you characters go down for coffee and send up four other desperate men to see strange and amusing things.
Do you want coffee, Tom?
Ara asked. No, I'll take tea when it's made.
We've only been on watch a couple of hours, Gil said. We don't need to go off, Tom.
Go on down and get coffee and give the other desperate men a chance for glory.
Tom, didn't you say you thought they were at Lobos?
Yes, but I changed my mind. The others had gone down and four were coming up. Gentlemen, Thomas Hudson said, split the four quadrants up amongst you. Is there coffee below?
Plenty, his mate said. And tea, the ancients are good, and she didn't make any more water than you would expect in a cross sea.
How was Peters?
He drank his own whiskey in the night. The one with a little lamb on it. But he stayed awake. Willie kept him awake and drank his whiskey, his mate said.
We have to fill gas at Confites and take on anything else there is.
They can load fast and I can kill a pig and scald and scrape him, his mate said. I'll give them a quarter at the radio station to help me and I can butcher him while you are running. You get some sleep while we load. Would you like me to steer?
No, I only have to send three signals at Confites, and you load, and I will sleep. Then we will pursue.
Toward home?
Of course, they may avoid us for a time, but they cannot escape us. Later, we will talk about it. How are they?
You know them. We will talk about it later. Steer in a little more, Tom. With that countercurrent, you'll shorten it.
Did you lose much with rolling?
Nothing that matters. This was a bit of a beam sea, his mate said.
Ya lo creo, said Thomas Hudson. I believe it.
There should only be the people of this Juan undersea boat around here. She must surely be the one they claim sunk. Now they are off La Guaira and above Kingston and on all the petrol lanes. Also, they are with the wolf packs.
Also, they are here sometimes.
Yes, for our sins.
And for theirs.
On this thing, we will pursue well and intelligently.
Let us get it started, Thomas Hudson said.
There has been no delay.
It goes slowly for me.
Yes, his mate said. But get some sleep in Confites, and I promise everything will go faster than you could hope.
Chapter 5 Thomas Hudson saw the high lookout post on the sandy quay and the tall signaling mast. They were painted white, and they were the first things that showed. Then he saw the stumpy radio masts and the high, cocked wreck of the ship that lay on the rocks and obscured the view of the radio shack. The quay was not handsome from his side. The sun was behind him, and it was easy to find the first big pass through the reef and then, skirting the shoals and the coral heads, to come up on the leeward shelter. There was a sandy half-moon of beach and the island was covered with dry grass on this side and was rocky and flat on its windward end. The water was clear and green over the sand, and Thomas Hudson came in close to the center of the beach and anchored with his bow almost against the shore. The sun was up and the Cuban flag was flying over the radio shack and the outbuildings. The signaling mast was bare in the wind, there was no one in sight, and the Cuban flag, new and brightly clean, was snapping in the wind. Maybe they had a relief, Thomas Hudson said. The old flag was pretty worn when we left. He looked and saw his drums of gas where he had left them and the marks of digging in the sand where his blocks of ice should be buried. The sand was high like new-made graves, and over the island sooty terns were flying in the wind. They nested in the rocks up at the windward end, and a few nested in the grass of the lee. They were flying now, falling off with the wind, cutting sharply into it, and dipping down toward the grass and the rocks. They were all calling, sadly and desperately. Must be somebody out getting eggs for breakfast, Thomas Hudson thought. Just then he smelled ham frying in the galley, and he went astern and called down that he would take his breakfast on the bridge. He studied the island carefully. They might be here, he thought. They could have taken this. But when a man in shorts came down the path that ran from the radio shack to the beach, it was the lieutenant. He was very brown and cheerful, and he had not cut his hair in 3 months, and he called out,
How was your trip?
Good, said Thomas Hudson. Will you come aboard for a beer?
Later,
the lieutenant said.
They brought your eyes and supplies and some beer 2 days ago. We buried the eyes. The other things are at the house.
What news do you have?
The aviation was supposed to have sunk a submarine off Guincho's 10 days ago, but that was before you left.
Yes, Thomas Hudson said. That was 2 weeks ago. Is that the same one?
Yes.
Any other news?
Another submarine was supposed to have shot down a blimp off Cayo Sal the day before yesterday.
Is that confirmed?
We heard so. Then there was your pig.
Yes.
The same day of the blimp, they brought a pig for you with your supplies, and he swam out to sea the next morning and was drowned. We have fed him, too.
Que puerco más suicido, Thomas Hudson said. The lieutenant laughed. He had a very cheerful brown face, and he was not stupid. He was acting because it amused him. He had orders to do anything he could for Hudson, and to ask him nothing. Thomas Hudson had orders to use any facilities the station could give, and tell nothing to anyone. Any more news? He asked. Have you seen any Bahaman sponging or turtle boats?
What would they be doing here when they have all the turtle and sponge over there? But there were 2 Bahaman turtle boats came by here this week. They turned off the port and tacked to come in, but they ran for Cayo Cruz instead.
I wonder what they were doing here.
I don't know. You cruise those waters for scientific purposes. Why should turtle boats leave the best turtling grounds to come here?
How many men could you see?
We could only see a man at the tiller. The boats had palm branches spread on the deck. They were built out like a shack. It could be to give shade for the turtles.
Were the helmsmen white or black?
White and sunburned.
Could you make out any numbers or names on the boats?
No, they were too far away. I put the key in a state of defense that night, and the next day and night, and there was nothing.
When did they go by?
The day before your eyes and Grosley's and your suicidal pig arrived. 11 days after the sub was reported sunk by your aviation. 3 days before you arrived here. Are they friends of yours?
You signaled them, of course.
Naturally, and I have heard nothing.
Can you send 3 messages for me?
Of course. Send them in as soon as they are ready.
I will start to load gas and ice and put the supplies aboard. Was there anything in them you can use?
I don't know. There is a list. I signed for it, but I could not read it in English.
Didn't they send any chickens or turkeys?
Yes, the lieutenant said. I was saving them for a surprise.
We'll split them, Thomas Hudson said. We'll split the beer, too.
Let my people help you load the gas and ice.
Good, thank you very much. I would like to be gone in 2 hours.
I understand. Our relief has been put off another month.
Again?
Again.
How do your people take it?
They're all here on a disciplinary basis.
Thank you very much for your help. The whole world of science is grateful.
Guantanamo, too?
Guantanamo, the Athens of science.
I think they may have holed up somewhere.
So do I, said Thomas Hudson.
The shelters were of coconut palm, and they were still green.
Tell me anything else.
I don't know anything else. Send in the messages. I don't want to come on board to take up any of your time or be a nuisance.
If anything perishable comes out while I am gone, use it before it spoils.
Thank you. I'm sorry your pig committed such suicide.
Thank you, said Thomas Hudson. We all have our small problems.
I'll tell the man not to come on board, but only to help load at the stern and help alongside.
Thank you, Thomas Hudson said. Can you remember anything more about the turtle boats?
They were typical. One was almost exactly the same as the other. They looked as though they had been built by the same builder. They turned the point of the reef and made to tack in here. Then they ran before the wind for Cayo Cruz.
Inside the reef?
Inside until they were out of sight.
And the sub off Cayo Sal?
Stayed on the surface and shot it out with the blimp.
I'd stay in a state of defense if I were you.
I am,
the lieutenant said.
That's why you haven't seen anybody.
I saw the birds moving.
The poor birds, the lieutenant said.